Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Our Matrix server is about as free as internet chat can be. Join the existing rooms or create your own at chat.freetalklive.com.
In the studio tonight, it's Ian
and Aria,
and joining us remotely,
it's Mark.
Mark is here. Where are you tonight, Mark? Oh, you don't like to say those things, do you?
Secret location.
Okay. Well, it's good to have you here from wherever you happen to be on this new 2023 edition of Free Talk Live, which we discussed quite a bit last night. In the first 2 hours, we talked about advertising, the advertising model. Is it dying? Is it going away? Does it even work anymore at all? And the only reason I'm bringing that up is because we actually already have a caller who wanted to weigh in on that particular topic.
Nice.
Otherwise, there's all kinds of other things for us to talk about, including Bitcoin's 14th birthday today. But let's go first to David in Georgia. David, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead.
Good evening, everybody. I'll make this quick. First of all, you guys were mentioning yesterday about YouTube, and YouTube takes 30% of Super Chats when you get a Super Chat.
Wow. So Aria was correct that if someone is going to donate, going through a Patreon, for instance, or some other more direct method is much preferred because the people who would benefit are going to benefit more.
Absolutely. Just send them an arrow.
Yeah, it sort of amazes me. I mean, back when I did gaming streams all the time, I did have a little, you know, QR code up there that people could send, multiple that people could scan in order to send me cryptocurrency, right? Mm-hmm. It amazes me that with YouTube taking 30% of the cut and other huge cuts of revenue from various sources on YouTube ads and things like that, that more content creators aren't just slapping a QR code up there in the top right corner that, you know, it could easily be scanned by anyone watching it, and just like that, it brings up a Bitcoin wallet or whatever.
I think a lot of them do have Patreons. I think when YouTube several
years ago, Patreon takes a huge cut too.
11% is better than 30, but when when YouTube started cracking down on channels, remember, like maybe 5 years ago, they started demonetizing people and people who had sort of thrown all their eggs into one basket and were just living off of YouTube revenue, were shocked. They were shocked because they figured that was, you know, the gravy train was going to go on forever, and then all of a sudden it started drying up. That's when a lot of them started getting these alternatives like a PayPal or one of these other sort of accounts. But David, what else did you want to share about it?
I know that there is actually a Monero plugin, so like you can actually do like a super chat thing through Monero where you donate the Monero and then your little message shows up as the in the stream. And the other part was that you guys mentioned that Bitcoin.com had dropped their sponsorship after like a decade or something like that.
Yes.
And I was thinking you might want to take a look into the Monero.com/cake wallet. I actually talked on Reddit with the person in charge of that. And he said he'd be quite interested, so I gave him the link to your advertising page and the marked email address. So
okay.
Maybe he might be getting in contact with you guys. That's
cool.
All I had to say.
We love Monero here at Free Talk Live.
Thank you. I would love to be able to use Monero again,
but
unfortunately, Aria, you and I are prohibited by bail conditions.
But I can still love it. You know,
yes, but you can email that contact information to me at mark@freetalklive.com. I want to follow up on that. Thank you.
Sure. Okay.
Thanks, David. Anything else you want to share?
No, that's it. Thank
Appreciate
you.
Appreciate it, man. All right, so, Mark, any comments since we are just sort of rehashing briefly this sort of advertising discussion that we had last night? I don't know if you happened to catch it. It lasted for mostly the first 2 hours of the show. Do you think
it makes it sound so boring when you're like, we were discussing advertising, but I mean, we were discussing so many things.
Yeah, we were talking about television revenues going down, television viewership going down, people of a younger viewpoint just not responding to advertising in the same way, doing everything they can to avoid it. Is the old model dying? Is it already dead?
Well, there's a book written, and I think it was in the late 90s, called you know, where they move my cheese or who moved my cheese.
Who moved my cheese.
You know, somebody moved the cheese, something like that. And it's just sort of looking at how business changes over time. And business is changing dramatically. And faster and faster. So when I started advertising, they would say that, look, hey, you got to watch out. People are getting 200 and 300 advertising messages per day. And, you know, then by the time we started Free Talk Live, I was hearing rumblings of them cranking that number up to 1,000. And now I'm hearing that people are, you know, getting 5,000 advertising messages per day.
What does that mean?
So, you know, right now I'm looking at a computer and I see a Bitcoin sign. I see a Dell sign. I see a Jitsi logo.
Okay.
I see, you know, the JVC. I think that's what that says. AOC.
The number of ads that you are being served, essentially.
Right. Okay. I'm being served all kinds of ads constantly. And, you know, that's just how our modern world is. Now, do I react to any of them? No. The answer is I don't. I haven't gone out and I've never bought another Dell because this Dell has served me well, and it has. You know, like there's just all kinds of things I don't do that you've, you know, in order to get your customer, it's much harder than it used to be to brand, you know, a given thing. Generally, when I buy tires, I'm going to buy Michelin because at some point in my life, somebody told me you can buy tires or you can buy Michelin. And, you know, that to me said that the most valuable people in my life can be kept safe with these slightly more expensive tires. So I'm going to buy those. And but I mean, you know, it's harder and harder to do in the world that Free Talk Live lives in. We're on the radio and the ads come in the middle of the talking time. We're not in many cases endorsing things, but even when we do endorse things, you know, everything's constantly competing for people's attention. So I would say, yes, it's getting harder and harder to make your ad dollar make sense. And each advertiser has to be very creative in order to make, you know, to make their money back. And that's not easy.
On the subject of creative ads, I wanted to bring this up last night, but we ended up moving into a different subject. I'm reminded of the PlayStation 3 advertisement that was just a baby doll sitting in a room in a sterile environment, a very dark room. It was a super eerie commercial, weird, made absolutely no sense whatsoever. Awful commercial. However, it got everyone talking about it.
You remembered it, apparently.
Well, no, I only remembered it because I recently watched a YouTube video about creative advertising. I was, you know, just going on one of these random YouTube walks, right? Mm-hmm. And it happened to mention this one, which I had never even seen before. I don't even think I had a television at the time that the PS3 was out. But it was a very creative ad, but it was nonsense, and it didn't tell you anything about the PlayStation 3. Mm-hmm. All it did was get people talking about the commercial. And because they were talking about the commercial, they were talking about the PlayStation 3. And by that metric, it was tremendously effective. Yeah. However, it didn't do a thing to tell you anything to make people interested in the PlayStation 3. But did it sell PlayStation 3s? I don't know. Probably.
When you're talking about a system like that, I think that it depends, right? Like, not every advertising is the same. So Dynavite was mentioned on the show last night, as I recall. And, you know, with that, you're talking about a dog vitamin who advertised for a very long time with Free Talk Live. And, you know, so you're trying to get one particular product sold, whereas with a PlayStation 3, you know, there's only three different consoles out, maybe four, I'm not entirely sure, and people have to pick between them. There's mostly fanboys. You're trying to whip up excitement. You know, you don't need to tell people that the Super Bowl occurs in January. You just kind of need to remind them and that sort of thing. So it just it depends on where you are, and that's why they have, you know, Madison Avenue companies. And by the way, the vast majority of those people who spend their money with those Madison Avenue advertising agencies, well, sorry, but you know, they're not seeing a lot of return right now either. It's very tricky.
All right. So anybody can comment, of course, on anything you want to hear. The number is 603-283-6160. And today's a big day in the history of Bitcoin. Of course, we mentioned in the fall, it was, I believe, Halloween is the date on which the Bitcoin white paper was released. But the day on which the first block was mined, when the software actually went into effect, is apparently January 3rd, 2009, which was 14 years ago. So
pretty soon Bitcoin is going to be 18 and libertarians won't be interested in it anymore.
Happy birthday, Bitcoin. Bitcoin.com from news.bitcoin.com has a story about it. They say that it was 14 years ago that Satoshi Nakamoto launched the Bitcoin network and Block Zero at approximately 1:15 Eastern in the afternoon on a Saturday. Satoshi's technology allowed, quote, online payments to be sent directly from one party to another without going through a financial institution, unquote. Since Bitcoin was born, it changed the financial system significantly and has sparked an entire cryptocurrency economy worth more than $800 billion in value. And I would point out it peaked at over $2 trillion a year ago.
I just can't imagine if Satoshi Nakamoto expected Bitcoin to be this successful on that day, 14 years ago.
Well, how could she or he?
Just on their laptop, they were like, you know, I've got this idea. I put it forward. I'm going to start it. I'm going to mine this block and see where it goes. And 14 years later, This is where we're at. Just amazing the trajectory that Bitcoin has been on, not from a value standpoint or a financial value standpoint, but a utility standpoint, and how it's grown to serve the needs of so much of the world's community.
Yeah,
thanks, Satoshi.
Yeah, absolutely. Whoever you are, Satoshi, out there, and whether or not Satoshi is still breathing, we have no idea. Satoshi, of course, disappeared from the scene in 2011.
That person who's in prison in Bolivia or Venezuela or whatever South American country that is, that's been one of the more compelling ideas I've seen for who could be Satoshi Nakamoto.
There are a lot of interesting theories out there. So far, we still have no real proof of any of it.
No, and I would never expect to.
I like Hal Finney. He was certainly involved very early on, and he also died. Mm-hmm. So wrapped up nice.
Yeah, he was one of the people that was definitely confirmed early on involved. It was Craig Wright, who's the fake Satoshi, the guy that has been claiming publicly to be Satoshi for years and has never proven anything to prove that he's actually Satoshi. But he was around in the early days along with this Hal Finney guy. And, yeah, there have been a lot of people that have said Hal kind of meets the profile. But, again, he passed away from some sort of medical issues several years back.
Well, realistically, anyone who was involved in Bitcoin, you know, 14 years ago or even 13 years ago will fit the profile of someone who could have been Satoshi Nakamoto. Because the only people who were into it in 2000, whatever it was, 2008, 2009, would have been people who were encryption experts and programming experts and just IT experts in general.
Yeah, and a good chance that those people were a little on the older side. There's been, you know, for decades, this cypherpunk movement of people who kind of value anonymity. They value, in many cases, anarchism, getting out from underneath the government's system of money. And Satoshi's Bitcoin was sort of the culmination or the apex, at least so far. Maybe you could argue Monero was next in line for that. But Satoshi's was such an important development financially. I don't think we've even really started to realize how important it is. I mean, some of us may have some idea from a philosophical standpoint, but society at large doesn't really get it quite yet.
You mentioned Monero, though, and I tend to believe that whoever created Bitcoin, Satoshi Nakamoto, was also the same person who created Monero, because there is an argument for it, and there's some reason to believe it. And ultimately, it's just a matter of saying, I choose to believe that, because Monero is an improved version of Bitcoin. It follows along the same trajectory. It improves a lot of things. It adds more privacy, more security.
Yes.
And it seems like Bitcoin version 2.0 to me.
There are some people who say that whoever the person was that wrote Monero, also an anonymous person, by the way, in their writing, supposedly writes in the style of Satoshi Nakamoto. Now, maybe that's a way for the person who wrote Monero to throw off, you know, people who are trying to figure out who that person happens to be, or maybe it is actually Satoshi.
Like, if I was writing something anonymously, one of the more obvious steps to take would be to use British English. Right.
Which is what he did, or Satoshi did.
I think
right?
so, which is like to put a U after an O in the word color and things of that mm-hmm. nature that an American wouldn't do. And if some person on the internet reading this would go, okay, well, this person's obviously British, and just like that, you've thrown them off your trail.
Right.
And that's such a simple little change a person could make. There's no telling.
It's also a way to just sound pretentious if you just want to go ahead and do that, too.
Oh, if you really want to sound pretentious, use the word whilst.
Whilst. Like,
yeah. It does nothing that the word while doesn't do.
Just adds a T.
Yeah, it just adds the st to it. And it sounds so
there's a
pretentious.
Distinction. There's a distinction. There sure is. It sounds very posh. There's a distinction in English, but I couldn't tell you what it is off the top of my head.
Well, when I was doing editing, I looked into it, and the common thread seemed to be that there was absolutely no difference whatsoever, except that whilst is more used in British mm-hmm. English.
So
right.
today,
so they use while and whilst, whereas we don't use whilst, we use while in two different scenarios, and I can't describe it off the top of
when
my
you
head.
Say whilst, I'm not, are you using the same word I am, whilst?
You're right, whilst.
Okay. I've never heard a British person pronounce it whilst, which is okay. what threw me off. Of course, I don't know any British people. So.
Well, the British accent, it's so wide and varied just within a very small geographic area, and it's getting even more wide and varied as time goes by because they all want their geographic distinctions to go. So I'm sure some say whilst and some say whilst.
I like the one where they put an R after every word that ends in an A. Like
they do that in Boston.
You mean with the pronunciation?
Yes. And I've seen so many threads of, like, British people claiming they don't even do that. It's like, how do you not hear it?
I don't know.
It's amusing to me.
So 14 years later, the Genesis block came out. It's otherwise known as Block Zero, according to news.bitcoin.com. It's the first Bitcoin block that bootstrapped the network. Block Zero is special because there are no ancestral blocks before it, and it was hard-coded into the software so it would have an official starting point, and every node can validate the blockchain from the very beginning. Because it's hard-coded, the Coinbase reward of 50 Bitcoin stored within the first block can never be spent. The 50 Bitcoin is stored in the Bitcoin address, and then they give it. And during the last 14 years, the address has seen a number of dust transactions sent to the wallet. That means at the time of the writing, the Bitcoin address has now 68.56 Bitcoin. So people have been donating Bitcoin to the Genesis block address over time. I did not know that.
I sort of I understand, and I don't understand why someone would do this. Guys, Satoshi Nakamoto has plenty of Bitcoin.
Well, plus he can never spend it anyway. It's locked.
Right.
So essentially,
is that true of the entire wallet or just the initial 50 Bitcoin?
Just the first 50 Bitcoin.
Okay, but the other 18 point whatever that's been donated
Know. I don't know. That's a good question. Well, Mark?
Maybe it's just like a wishing well. Why do people throw money into wishing wells?
Mm.
But they do.
That's a really good point. I like that. That's the Bitcoin wishing well.
Yeah, all right. So another well-known fact about Block Zero is the message that Satoshi Nakamoto encoded in the Coinbase parameter. The special field can
be used to say hello world?
No, it was actually an attack on the banking system. I'll share it with you here in a moment. The special field can be used to include an arbitrary message in the block. Now, of course, most people would never see these things, but because it's the zero block, obviously a lot of people have looked here. And the message said, quote, the times, 03 January 2009, so the date, Chancellor on the brink of second bailout for banks. So it brings you back to what was going on in the world, especially in the United States and the UK at that time during the big, semi-recession or whatever you want to call it, the housing market, of course, crashing at that time, and the U.S. and apparently the U.K. government rolling in with taxpayer money by turning on the printing press for the bailout of, you remember, GM, I think, got one, and, of course, the big banks got one for all their mortgages they were underwater on.
But notably, Ford was the only American car company that did not get one.
They turned it down, didn't they?
I think so. And I don't remember they just weren't offered one. I just remember making a mental note at the time and just being impressed that even though they could have gotten one, Ford declined it. And that's impressive to me.
The message has been interpreted in a myriad of ways, but mostly as a reference to the financial crisis and bank bailouts of 2008.
Seems to be just a statement of fact, right? Like, this is what's happening today.
Right. Well, now, some would say that this was part of Satoshi's reason for creating Bitcoin.
And I would agree. Right?
To take the power of money out of the hands of the banks and the governments of the world and to put it into the hands of the individual. This great decentralization of the money supply that is something that is such a threat to the status quo that we are now seeing a full-on assault 14 years later against Bitcoin and its adherents and its advocates and cryptocurrencies, the industry as a wider whole, the SEC, of course, attacking Ripple, attacking Library and several other developers, the FBI going after people for simply selling Bitcoin online. Even those who actually got the government paperwork have been targeted.
There was a guy in, I think, Texas.
Yeah. Risen, I think, is his name.
And he was ultimately accused of not having a state permit to operating a money transmitting business, even though his state, like New Hampshire, didn't require him to have one.
That's right. Yeah. And he's now spending, apparently it was like, I think it was like a 15-month sentence, but they must have cut it back because he posts regularly to Twitter through his son, who's operating his Twitter account, and he's going to be out in like 60 days. So maybe he's just going to a halfway house, kind of like Cantwell did or something like that. But still, the dude took a plea deal because the feds threatened to come after his wife if he didn't just take a plea. Even though he did everything that he could legally do to try to jump through all the legal hoops, they still came after him. So it just goes to show that you are not safe. It doesn't matter. Like, think about Ripple. Ripple is, and when I say you, I mean like people that are trying to do something, not just users. The average user, there's too many of those. They're not going to put everybody in jail.
Well, they're also not trying to do anything, right?
Right, right. Somebody that's trying to create something, somebody that's trying to perform some sort of service, you are not safe. I mean, if you look at Ripple, Ripple is this crypto that was designed to be sold essentially as a tool for the banks. So they've always been trying to curry favor with the government, curry favor with the banking system, and be part of the system. They're not like these outsiders like Monero or something like that. They want to be part of the system, and the system's coming after them. The system is trying to destroy that company, and they are destroying Library. And Library tried to tell the SEC. He said the Library guy said to the SEC, "Look, just tell us what to do. We want to be able to comply with your rules, so we can be move past this and keep building this technology." And they couldn't get an answer. There was no clear answer from the SEC.
If the government provides an answer, then they can't prosecute everyone. If they tell you exactly what's illegal, then you'll know what's illegal. You'll know what to do. And if you do it, then they can't prosecute you.
And let's not act like the government is one thing here. It's several different agencies which have several different definitions of what cryptocurrency is and all these sorts of things. It's not just difficult to find out what to do. It's completely effing impossible.
Yeah. There's more coming up here. You can join the show. The number is 603-283-6160. It's Bitcoin's 14th birthday. Happy birthday, Bitcoin. We're going to continue here in moments. This is Free Talk Live.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
USA News update, Brian Koberger, the man accused of stabbing four University of Idaho students to death, has agreed to his extradition from Pennsylvania back home to Idaho to face murder charges. Police Colonel Robert Ivanchik said he was shocked to learn that the suspect was part of his community.
I did not imagine the investigation would lead to the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. My heart goes out to the families of the victims.
Arrangements are being made to return him to Idaho. The Buffalo Bills say DeMar Hamlin is still in ICU at the University of Cincinnati Medical Center in critical condition. Fans in shock witnessing what they saw in the stadium.
I've never heard a stadium so silent.
We just hope and pray to God that he's able to recover.
The team and family says they're thankful for the outpouring of support.
A speaker has not been elected.
After three rounds of voting, House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy still does not have enough votes to become Speaker. Jeremy Scott, USA News.
When it comes to vaping, the truth can get clouded. So let's make it clear. Vaping is not safe for kids, teens, or young adults. It's just not.
Because vaping can put microscopic particles into your lungs.
And dangerous things like metals and volatile organic compounds into your body.
And nicotine, the same highly addictive substance found in regular cigarettes.
Nicotine can harm a person's brain development through their mid-20s.
Affecting learning, memory, attention, and impulse control. And priming the brain for other addictions.
Vaping products also come in kid-friendly flavors that can make them appealing to youth.
And many kids also use other drugs, like marijuana, in vaping devices.
With appealing flavors, high nicotine levels, and lots of promotion on social media,
many kids think vaping is harmless, but it's not.
So talk to your kids about the risks of vaping, because when you talk, they hear you.
Stop aging now. Restore those joints. Boost your strength. Because it's official. NutriMedical has released the most exciting, powerful anti-aging supplement on the market. Dr. Bill Deagle's Red Deer Velvet DR has been approved by the U.S. Patent Office. Imagine stem cell rejuvenation all in one capsule without huge expense. Dr. Bill MD discovered that as an unborn baby grows in the mother's womb, he or she does not deteriorate or physically age. Red Deer Velvet DR, like the uterus, provides 300 biomolecules and 6 hormones protected in one special DR capsule that delivers lipid packages directly into your circulation. This patented technology bypasses the stomach and is released into the small bowel unaltered by digestive enzymes and stomach acid. Remember, Red Deer Velvet DR. Improve endurance, stimulate your immune system, increase learning ability, and even improve sexual libido with Red Deer Velvet DR. Click NutriMedical.com. That's N-U-T-R-I Medical.com. Or call toll-free 888-212-8871 and get on the road to a newer, rejuvenated, happier you.
We still do email. Drop your email address in the entry box at freetalklive.com, and you'll be kept in the loop with Free Talk Live.
Free Talk Live, and you can join the show here. The number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. Free Talk Live is brought to you this hour by Bullion Max. BullionMax.com/FTL. That's where you can go and get your silver starter kit at employee pricing. You get that because you're a Free Talk Live listener. And maybe you're new to silver and gold. Some of the most stable assets in recorded history. Savvy investors have been diversifying into silver and gold for generations, and now you can too. Or maybe you're not so brand new, and you're just looking for a new gold or silver option where you can buy a ton of variety. They've got that over for you at bullionmax.com/FTL. That's where you can get started and help protect yourself from the constant inflation of the Federal Reserve. We've been talking about Bitcoin here, which is, of course, another wonderful alternative. But gold and silver were doing the same thing for people for much, much longer, long before 2009. We're talking about, you know, hundreds of years people have been protecting their wealth by getting into gold and silver. You can get 5 ounces of silver from the world's most popular mints, and they throw in a free gold back. Just go to bullionmax.com/FTL. That's bullionmax.com/FTL. It's Ian, Aria, and Mark here joining you tonight. We've been talking about the 14th birthday of Bitcoin, which is today, according to news.bitcoin.com that has a piece here kind of about, you know, it gets a little bit too technical, so I'm not going to get into that part here where they talk about hash rates and things like that. We don't really need to know about all that. But they do say that it changed everything because it introduced the first working solution to the Byzantine generals problem.
Well, sort of. And I dispute the idea that Bitcoin actually contributed anything on this particular. No, Bitcoin contributed a lot. Don't get me wrong. However, the very existence of 51% attacks, the continued existence of 51% attacks, although they're prohibitively expensive on the Bitcoin blockchain, that's because of the value of Bitcoin and so on, it doesn't actually do anything to solve that particular problem. 51% attacks still exist. If you have 51% of people who are bad actors, it will still destroy the entire plan. Bitcoin didn't fix that problem. It just made it prohibitively expensive.
So I don't know enough about what the Byzantine generals problem is.
I wouldn't be able to explain it in the full way that it's set up, but it's got something to do like you're in ancient time, ancient Rome, ancient Byzantium, you're attacking a city. All your plan requires some percentage of your generals to either take a certain action at the same time or to not take an action at the certain time. If some of them are bad actors and they don't comply, it derails the entire plan. So okay. You need to come up with a way for
I've got it here. According to Medium.com, imagine divisions of a Byzantine army attacking a completely encircled city. To proceed, the generals of each division, who are dispersed around the city's periphery, must agree on a battle plan. However, while some generals want to attack, others may want to retreat. In the official description of the Byzantine generals' problem, there's a leader-follower setup in order to achieve consensus. The commanding general and every lieutenant must agree on the same decision. The conditions are described as follows. The commanding general must send an order to his N-1 lieutenant generals such that, 1, all loyal lieutenants obey the same order, and 2, if the commanding general is loyal, then every loyal lieutenant obeys the order he sends.
It gets really confusing, and the problem here is, the reason it gets confusing is because any one of those lieutenants could be a spy operating for the enemy city, and if they give one of those generals bad information, the entire plan fails.
To complicate matters, the generals are so far apart from each other that the messengers are required in order for the generals to communicate. Also, one or more lieutenants may be a traitor intending to sabotage the situation. So given these conditions and the commander-lieutenant setup, can the army execute a strategy? The solution to the problem relies on an algorithm that can guarantee that, 1, all loyal lieutenants decide upon the same plan of action, and 2, the small number of traitors cannot cause the loyal lieutenants to adopt the bad plan.
So the 51% would be the disloyal lieutenants causing the blockchain to adopt the wrong plan.
But the odds that that can happen are very, very, very
low. Right, it's prohibitively expensive. It's not going to happen, that's for sure. But it's because, and this is why Bitcoin initially imposed the block size limit of 1 megabyte, and then ultimately I think it got increased a little bit with that a segment, and it all gets very, very complicated. However, the gist of it is that Satoshi Nakamoto knew this problem wasn't solved, and that the Bitcoin blockchain needed some level of protection in order to prevent it, to safeguard it against 51% attacks.
The loyal lieutenants will all do what the algorithm says they should, but the traitors may do anything they wish. The algorithm must guarantee the first condition regardless of what the traitors do. The loyal lieutenants should not only reach an agreement, but should agree upon a reasonable plan. And so Satoshi Nakamoto somehow solved this problem. I presume that has to do with the fact that the blockchain is distributed and, you know, constantly being checked upon itself to make sure that there's no sneakiness going on with somebody trying to cook the books.
It's true that no one can slip in a false transaction into the Bitcoin blockchain. Mm-hmm. Like, that aspect of it is true. But if enough of the lieutenants are disloyal, if enough of the miners are bad actors, then they can derail the entire blockchain.
Sure. Well, we understand that. I mean, that's what the 51% attack is. Right. The idea there is that 51% of the miners would be bad actors, and they would act to destroy the system, basically take it over and, you know, and essentially destroy the value of Bitcoin, which, again, would be insanely prohibitively expensive when it comes to the Bitcoin blockchain.
It's not practical.
Because they would need to spend billions upon billions of dollars in order to attain the mining equipment necessary, and attain the hash rate necessary in order to be able to. It just, from a financial perspective, it's not even viable.
Right, because the cost of the ASICs and the miners and all of that equipment would go up, as well as the technological people who are setting it up. All of that would go up as the supply of their skills went lower because other people were buying it, and as the supply of ASICs went lower because more people were buying it.
Well, but so, even if you could acquire it all in one fell swoop, it would be prohibitively expensive to do so, and then you would just, sink the value of the thing that you wanted to...
I don't even think you would, because the rest of the world, in a very free market way, would just be like, okay, well, we're ignoring your blockchain now, we're continuing with this fork that isn't as corrupted as your blockchain.
But in theory, you could then move your miners to attack that fork. If you had that much, much mining power, you could destroy any blockchain in the world.
Good point.
And
the only organization that I think makes sense for that is an organization that can create money. Mm-hmm. They would have to be able to create money in order to, and then surreptitiously acquire enough ASICs. These are the special computers. What does ASIC stand for, Aria?
Application-specific integrated circuit, I believe.
I think so.
That you get, yeah, that sounds right. And maybe it's computer at the end. Anyway, these ASICs, they would just turn them on all at once. It could be done, but like you said, prohibitively expensive. At this point, there's no organization that it makes sense to do this for. I can only come up with, like, the Federal Reserve, the United States government, the World Bank, whatever issues the euro.
Well, and the fact
is, I don't think Russia could do it. China would, it wouldn't be good for China's economy to do it, in my opinion.
Well, right. And that is, of course, a lot of people have been asking this question over the years is, well, what, if indeed it's true that the Federal Reserve is threatened by Bitcoin, why wouldn't they go through with the 51% attack?
See, that's what people don't understand. The Federal Reserve, the U.S. government, they cannot be overtly evil. If they act in a way that is overtly evil, if they go out to destroy in this immoral, fraudulent sort of sense with the 51% attack, this piece of technology, that destroys the faith of the public. The only reason this entire stupid system exists is because the average person is able to walk around the world believing that the U.S. government is a force for good in the world.
Well, but Bitcoin doesn't exactly have a force for good reputation at this point. I mean, we saw the jury in Ian's trial basically, I'm not so sure about this Bitcoin thing. The average person isn't sure.
That's because they believe the U.S. government is a force for good. U.S. government says this, therefore this.
Well, then that's what I'm saying. Is that
was exactly
the Reserve
my point.
Could say, hey, we got the white hat. Bitcoin's got the black hat. And I would say that it was even true in the past, more so. Obviously, it hasn't been done in the past. It can only be done in the future. I would think that in the near future, if an attack occurred, a 51% attack occurred on the Bitcoin network, that it would likely rally, win, and then the price would skyrocket because it would show that it could stand up to that. But, you wouldn't want to do a 51% attack. You would want to do a 65% attack.
I see your point, though, and I hadn't really thought that through considerably. Like, if the U.S. government were to do it, then the average person would think that it was an action, it was a good and just action, simply because the U.S. government had undertaken it.
That's the idea, but I don't think that they could acquire, and I don't know if it's the U.S. government, I'm actually saying the Federal Reserve, could acquire enough ASICs to do the job. At this point, when, the Department of Education buys 100 shotguns, everybody's like, what's going on? So it would be difficult to, for the world not to know if, the Federal Reserve was surreptitiously buying up ASICs.
So another reason why they might not do this is because there are probably people within the Federal Reserve System who own Bitcoin. right? Like, there's probably some people that have seen the value of this, or at least have predicted that it may go up in value, and they have purchased it on their own personal recognition, and they don't want to see that fail, right? Like, they may still indeed believe in the Federal Reserve and the government and the CBDC, the central bank digital currency, or all of that, but on the back end, they probably don't tell their buddies that they've got themselves their own little Bitcoin collection. They don't want
to that's true, because some people have left the Federal Reserve and come over to our side and started working within the Bitcoin world, as sort of regulator helpers and interfaces and that kind of thing. So I think you're right. I think Bitcoin's here to stay, but I'm just trying to come up with the only system I think that could bring it down at this point.
Well, according to crypto51.app, this is a website that lists lists the current hash rate, which is the amount of computing power that is being directed towards mining a specific proof-of-work cryptocurrency.
I can't imagine what it is at this point. I mean,
it's down from what it was.
I'm still like 2 years behind on this, right? But yeah. It's going to at least, I would guess, 70 terahash. It's going to be the P one now.
Petahash. 261,951 petahashes. What that means, I don't know. But it does translate it into what they believe it would cost in dollars in order to attack the network for 1 hour of time. Because in order to, you know, do this 51% attack, you have to dominate the network for, you know, as long as you possibly can. And it's $691,972, so just under $700,000 for 1 hour of a 51% attack against the Bitcoin.
But it needs much more than 1 hour.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. Well, and also remember that during a 51% attack, as I understand this, now, if there's somebody out there that knows a little bit more about this than I do, because we've seen these things happen on smaller networks. Bitcoin SV, for instance, was attacked a couple of years ago, if I recall correctly, before we got raided. I remember they were attacked. And basically what happens when a 51% attack is going on is the word gets out. Hey, Bitcoin network's under attack. You know, don't transact. Because if you transact, if I were to try to send you, which we can't do, Aria, because we're
obviously
on bail conditions, but if we weren't on bail conditions and we were allowed to use cryptocurrency, let's say we were trying to use, Litecoin or something like that, something that's more attackable. Bitcoin Cash, for instance, says here Bitcoin Cash would cost about $3,300 an hour to run a 51% attack. Word gets out that says, hey, there's an attack going on. Don't use it. If during that time frame I were to try to send you Bitcoin Cash, then the attackers could effectively redirect those coins to their own wallet, is what they could do. But they can't take coins out of your wallet. So as long as you don't authorize a transaction during the 51% attack, just because they quote-unquote own the network over 50% of the hash rate, that doesn't mean that they all of a sudden get your private key and can just reach in and take your Bitcoin.
Right.
So it really only affects the people who don't get the memo that there's a 51% attack going on. And that's going to be most people, right? Because, I mean,
that's
most
gonna
people,
be most, yeah.
Yeah, most people don't know. But the fact is, the word would get out, and that's one of the reasons why you need to keep on attacking, because you have to keep owning the network. So
yeah,
the
you
longer
have to
you
attack
own
for an hour here, 1 week, and an hour
no,
the next week.
No, you want to keep it going. You want to if you want to destroy the network, then you want to make it unusable, right? That's going to destroy the value of Bitcoin. If you can dominate the network for a long enough time, people are going to go elsewhere. They're going to move and the price of Bitcoin is going to tumble.
I was thinking if 10% of transactions were subject to a 51% attack because someone had that level of power over the Bitcoin network.
Just do it randomly.
But they did it randomly. I would stop transacting. It's not worth the risk, right?
Let's go to the phones here. We got a gentleman on the line here. You're on Free Talk Live. What's your name?
Hey, it's Reverend Ratspeed.
Hey, Ratspeed. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to mention the Byzantine generals problem. I wanted to clarify something, and then I wanted to propose something for you to discuss. The Byzantine generals problem only handles an attack up to 51%. So Bitcoin actually does address it. If you have an attack that's over 51%, it's no longer a Byzantine generals problem. That's simply a takeover of basically the majority. So
that's a fair point. Yeah, I'll accept that.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is I think we're kind of worried about the things that we shouldn't be worried about. I think the Byzantine generals problem has been completely the network itself has been completely overtaken as of 2018 because of the whole SegWit thing. I thought it was very peculiar that back in the day when that quote-unquote soft fork was happening and then all of a sudden the new Bitcoin retained the old name of Bitcoin when in fact that was the soft fork.
Are you going to have to – even I'm a little bit lost here. Are you referring to when Bitcoin Cash and Bitcoin had their schism back in 2017?
Correct. Bitcoin Cash is Bitcoin. It's not a fork. That's what people were led to believe through the propaganda because once you change the code and inject something else that was not in the previous code, that's...
Well, let's be fair. I mean, Bitcoin Cash has changed the code many times since it...
And it had changed before, though. I mean, there were many hard forks in Bitcoin's history prior to the one in 2018.
Correct. But all of the forks, in other words, whatever the majority was retained the name Bitcoin.
Right, which was still the case after 2018 when the majority still retained the name of Bitcoin. It just was separate.
So what my proposal is that once that happened, once SegWit and other extra stuff was put into the code, the Byzantine generals problem is null and void outside of that network. Just the same way that a virtual machine can be manipulated like a marionette by the strings of the host computer. In other words, you basically had a fish eat up another fish. You had and what was the big fish that ate the smaller fish? It was the banking system. Mm-hmm. I think that
you're talking about how Bitcoin was sort of taken over quietly from the inside by big bankers who essentially paid the paychecks, because the programmers of Bitcoin never got paid by anybody up until 2016.
If you remember, the people that were on the side of the soft fork into SegWit were the miners who stood to lose everything that they had invested in by getting all those really expensive, hardcore GPU units, ASIC units, because if the scaling of the blockchain had progressed as Satoshi originally intended, which is what Bitcoin Cash stayed with, all they did was they started splitting it the way that it was supposed to, then they would have lost their profits. They didn't want to lose their profits. Therefore, the people that who stood the most to lose put together a propaganda campaign to overtake the coin and make it what they wanted it to be.
And I don't know if I necessarily think the miners were responsible for that. I'm building most of my history of Bitcoin off of the documentary Who Killed Bitcoin, and it made a pretty compelling case that it wasn't the miners who were pro-SegWit. It was the banking industry and these wealthy figures who had co-opted Bitcoin for their own purposes, whose names I can't remember, but they're affiliated with all sorts of groups, and it's like they're connected to this group, and these guys are connected to this group, and it comes back to the Council of Foreign Relations or whatever.
I think what Ratspeed is saying here is that the miners, you know, maybe they didn't lead the charge, but ultimately they went in the direction of what they thought was financially beneficial for them, which was to get $5 fees on every transaction instead of 5-cent fees.
Exactly. If the banking industry is considered the mafia, then who's the mafia going to try to pay off the most to get them to go their way? The rich, powerful miners in the Bitcoin network.
Sure.
And then once that new code is injected into it, which was SegWit, suddenly the whole thing is, to use the expression from Britain, cocked up. It basically is completely null and void. And so the whole Byzantine generals problem, it really doesn't matter anymore. That's why I think it was so important for people to switch over to Bitcoin Cash at the very minimum when that soft fork happened.
Well, if the miners, you can prove the miners didn't care about the principle of the matter. They just wanted to make money, because if they had cared about the principle, they would have moved over to Bitcoin Cash, and most of them didn't.
Yeah, And if you notice that most of the major political changes and shifts that happened in the Bitcoin realm happened after that soft fork. Before that soft fork happened, there really was no foothold in this entire Bitcoin mining operation or the currency. After 2018, that's when governments started stepping in.
Why are you calling it a soft fork? I'm just curious.
That's what they called it. I think, personally, soft fork is just as much of a propaganda term as you know, calling the government a government.
Well, the 2018 fork was, by all accounts, a hard fork, wasn't it?
Oh, no. Yeah. Well, okay, so according to all of the articles...
It was a chain fork,
That's a hard fork.
Everyone was calling it a soft fork. You can look it up. So they were trying to make it seem like it was, oh, don't worry, that's just a soft fork. You don't have to worry about things.
I know what he's talking about. He's saying that the fork, quote-unquote, fork for Bitcoin, BTC, into the new code that they were going to use was indeed a soft fork. It wasn't a hard fork.
But the BCH fork was the hard fork.
But then what happened was there was a chain fork that happened, which is different from a coding. It's not really so much a coding standpoint. It was just that they went off in their own direction, and the BTC went in another direction, and so you had a chain split at that point. And for listeners that don't know what that means, it means that on the blockchain, from the very beginning, the blockchain is essentially a distributed ledger of all the transactions that have ever happened on a given cryptocurrency. So in the case of Bitcoin, starting January 3rd of 2009, their blockchain started, and then I think it was August 1st of 2017, if I recall correctly, was the day on which that schism happened, where there were then two copies of the Bitcoin blockchain that became into existence. One of them was Bitcoin Cash, the other was Bitcoin. But they all had the same transactions right up until the moment of that split on their chain, and then they started having different transactions from that point forward, and they've been competing ever since.
And my point in bringing all this up is I think it was unfair for Bitcoin Cash to be called Bitcoin Cash when that was the true Bitcoin, unchanged. Bitcoin plus Segwit became the fork, therefore they should have been forced to change their name, not the other way around.
Well, no one was forced to do anything. It was a matter of the market and how most people understood the thing.
Well,
and you said yourself that the most popular one is the one that gets to maintain the name of Bitcoin.
Well, you say that the market decided this. Well, whomever decided to change their code and begin introducing Segwit into the code, yes, that was a market change. What if those were the people that were being paid off?
Well, the guy who created GIF insists that it's supposed to be pronounced GIF, but you got a 99% of people out there, and it's pronounced GIF.
Well,
yeah, but
look,
at that point, I mean, and there's no Byzantine problem for GIF. So,
well, Ratsby, I get what you're saying, but the reality of it is most of the miners went with the original BTC blockchain, and then most of the exchanges out there were the ones that said, okay, well, the original BTC blockchain should still be considered
not Kraken, they called it XBT.
No, I think they've been doing that.
Oh, have they?
Yeah. So, anyway, thank you for the call, Ratsfeed. I do appreciate hearing from you. Hour number two is on the way. You can share your thoughts on Bitcoin's birthday.
If you're like most Americans, you can see things are out of control. Global problems have local consequences. Too many of them. And if the next news headline spins us into chaos, you'd better be ready. Grocery store supply chains are only as strong as their weakest link. Don't wait for them to break. Today's the day to secure emergency food for everyone in your family. My Patriot Supply is America's largest preparedness company. Our specially packaged and delicious food stays fresh for up to 25 years in storage. It'll be there when you need it. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and pick up several emergency food kits. There are a dozen different sizes that average over 2,000 calories per day. As we all know, calories equals energy equals survival. And as you'd expect from a true preparedness company, our food kits are in stock and ship quickly. Those who know what's coming are preparing today. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
I had no idea it would destroy my life. But before it happened, I had a successful business in Austin, Texas. Everyone laughed at me when I shut that business down, but I could not ignore the wake-up call. I was volunteering on a project to get locally grown food into a school. That project was a complete failure, and I discovered that there were few local farmers. There's only 4 days worth of food in the grocery stores, and everything comes 1,500 miles via a just-in-time trucking system. I lost friends and family who told me I was crazy to worry about that, but I kept at it. I'm Marjorie Wildcraft. Those of us who know what's going on in the world know you need to become self-reliant before the dollar collapses. I've created a free webinar at gcnfood.com. I can show you, like I've shown hundreds of thousands of people, how to grow lots of food, even if you have no experience, you're older, or you're out of shape. Do it now, before the stores are boarded up and food is not available at any price. Go to gcnfood.com. gcnfood.com.